Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
We as his legal team were not served with the application before the magistrate, and therefore we will be intervening ex post facto to try and challenge that arrest warrant.
Lawyers for former Botswana President Khama plan to challenge arrest warrant against him.
Now, it is his impunity that has led to the entire trouble that has caused the arrest, that caused the brutalization of young graduates, that caused a terrible election of the convocation.
Uganda's Makerere University convocation leadership contest descends into chaos and police arrests.
So we'll make sure every family who is involved within the quarters of the 27,000 mile square must be subject to Gadangbe Lands Administration.
And the Gadangbe Land Administration says it plans to stop the illegitimate sale of galants in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Botswana, lawyers for exiled former President Serete Khama, Ian Khama, say they plan to challenge the warrant seeking the arrest of the former head of state. This after a court issued an arrest warrant against Khama linked to charges including illegal possessions of firearms and money laundering. The former president dismissed the charges as politically motivated in an effort to prevent him from involvement in the coming 2024 general election. Critics say the former president escaped justice after violating the country's laws. They called on the government to seek extradition from neighboring South Africa, where he is believed to be exiled. For reaction to the arrest warrant and plans to legally challenge it, I reach attorney Tebogo Tladi. He is a leading member of former President Khama's legal defense team.
A magistrate's court in Gaborone, Botswana, has issued a warrant of arrest for former President Khama. And his legal team has convened, and we are looking at carrying out his instructions to challenge the arrest warrant.
How does this work, that his legal team will challenge the arrest warrant issued against him? Because some people are saying he absconded from Botswana when he could have just gone forward over the allegations that he possessed illegal weapons and addressed this issue head on.
Well, first, to perhaps set the record straight, President Khama did not abscond from Botswana. He left the country last year in beginning of November, long before the Director of Public Prosecutions decided to charge him and others. The criminal case has been going on in the magistrate's courts in relation to accused persons who are within the country. But as for President Khama, he has not yet been served with the summons in the criminal matter, and therefore criminal proceedings as against him have not commenced in terms of the procedure that the DPP are well aware of. They have told the court before that they intended to have him extradited, so this could just be perhaps a step in preparation of preparing extradition proceedings. But one other thing to state is that President Khama has filed a case in the High Court challenging the Director of Public Prosecution's decision to prosecute him. So the arrest warrant is, in our view, quite premature because the High Court is yet to deal with the review application against the DPP's decision. But I do not want to go into the merits of the warrant and the application before it. Safe to say that we as his legal team were not served with the application before the magistrate, and therefore we will be intervening ex post facto to try and challenge that arrest warrant. In relation to whether or not President Khama possesses weapons illegally, again, it's a matter that's now before the court, even though proceedings have not been served against President Khama. So I will not comment on the merits and demerits of it. So that is the position.
Well, some are suggesting that his refusal to return to Botswana to challenge these legal challenges that he had means that he doesn't want to follow the judicial proceedings, and that it will be right and will be a good step for the government of Habaroni to officially petition his extradition to return to Botswana to face his legal troubles. What's your response to that?
Well, the reason why President Khama left Botswana in the first place was because he had concerns about the safety, his safety and his security, and he had reported this to the United Nations rapporteur in Botswana, and the government has responded simply by saying that the concerns are baseless and has not done anything to assure his safety or his security. He has gone very public about his fears of returning to Botswana and the reasons why he left. So he has been in litigating against the government, and this year, on the 4th of November, he prevailed in two cases against the Directorate of Intelligence and Security, where they were seeking search warrants against him. And in another matter where the High Court had refused a search warrant, and they proceeded to lock down State House 4, which is President Khama's official residence provided by government as a retirement benefit. The other case dealt with President Khama's challenge against the Directorate of Intelligence and Security barricading his house and closing it down pending the appeals. In both matters, President Khama prevailed in the Court of Appeal, stating that they acted unlawfully. And the main reason why really it is not that simple as people, as you say, people are saying he should just come back to face his legal troubles, is because he believes the charges are politically motivated because of his feud with the current administration, which the current administration has also went public about to say there is a current feud going on between them, but they have not come out with the details of what that feud means, except allegations which have been made in the public, which have been exchanged between the two parties. So extradition is a process on its own. The government is entitled to attempt it, and President Khama will respond to it legally in accordance with his rights. He believes that he will not be extradited for politically motivated charges, and that is a well-known legal principle of extradition.
Tebogo Tladi is a leading member of former President Khama's legal defense team. He spoke with me from the Botswana capital, Habaroni. In Uganda, a candidate on the chairmanship of the Makerere University Convocation Leadership Contest says he plans to legally challenge the outcome of the vote this week. Attorney Charles Odongto says the chairperson of the convocation poll violated the constitution governing the election. He said that failed process is to blame for the chaos that led to the arrest of 7 young graduates of the university. The arrested former students have since been released on police bonds. Tanga Odoi, the outgoing chairman of the convocation, is also the chairperson of the Electoral Commission of the Governing National Resistance Movement, or NRM. Critics blame him for the chaos and allege voter irregularities during the contest. Local media report escalated tensions following the deployment of heavy security during the vote at the university. For the latest developments, I reached candidate Charles Odongto in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
7 young graduates of Makerere University, all of them boys, were arrested and taken to Wandegeya police station in the middle of the city, and But today, Saturday, we managed to secure their release, all of them on bond. And they are right now out. I've just returned from police, and but we managed to secure their release.
So, Charles, what was the major problem that led to the arrest?
This is a university that has just celebrated 100 years. And so the convocation this time attracted lots of attention, especially of the young graduates. And so some of us joined it. We were, I think, a total of 9 candidates. But the chairperson of the convocation, who is now outgoing, but he also happens to have had a person that he was particularly interested in. He's called Dr. Tanga Odoi. He's a former lecturer of the same university, but now he doubles as the chairman of the Electoral Commission of the ruling party in Uganda. Now, it is his impunity that has led to the entire trouble that has caused the arrests, that caused the brutalization of young graduates, that caused a terrible election of the convocation, because he flouted almost all the rules of the constitution of the convocation were flouted, and he did not want the candidates to even bring it to his attention. He was not supposed to preside over the elections. It was the constitution says it is supposed to be the returning officer, who is also the academic registrar of the university. But he sidelined the returning officer and held on to the register of the convocation of all the graduates and kept registering more people even as the elections neared, against the rules of the game.
Why is it that Makerere, the premier university, is having such difficulty when it comes to election? Recent guild elections also culminated into violence that led to arrest and of even a member of parliament. What is happening at Makerere University? Can't you get your act together to elect people peacefully? And is this a reflection of what is happening in Uganda?
Now, very interesting question there you ask. I will tell you from the outset, I now think Makerere University as the university is not the problem. The problem is the impunity. The problem is the greed. The problem is the dictatorship. The problem is, primitivity of some of the, I am hard-pressed to call them leaders of the university and some leaders of our country. Why I'm hard-pressed to call them leaders is because leaders do not lead in such manner. I think the problem of Makerere University is because it has a lot of opportunities. It has, I think, the problem we have in Uganda is that government, where I blame government, is that government has given a blind eye. So there are people who use the name of the state, who abuse the state and its positions, and they use their positions in the state to cause all kinds of abuses in Makerere University.
So what's next after this kerfuffle, the election not coming on? What's next?
We are going to court. We cannot leave this to stay unchallenged. We will go to court. We are civilized people. We respect the rule of law. We know that there are people who doubt the objectivity of our court systems. I am a lawyer as well. I still trust that there are some fine gentlemen and women on the bench in our court system. And this was so flagrant. This was so openly abusive of the rule of law. This week, especially because we are dealing with young people, and our hope is that they should start learning that there is some hope even when things are bad. And we cannot leave this to stay as it is unchallenged, because then the young people will start thinking it is only through impunity that you can secure your opportunities.
Charles Odongto is a candidate on the chairmanship of the Makerere University convocation. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Pope Benedict XVI, who shocked the world by resigning from the papacy in 2013, died on Saturday at the age of 95. Benedict, the German conservative theologian who still influenced Roman Catholic Church doctrine, lived for nearly 10 years behind the Vatican's walls as a retired pope. A pope's death usually sets in motion a complicated procedure to choose the next head of the Catholic Church. But Pope Francis succeeded Benedict when he stepped down in 2013. Carol Van Dam asked Monsignor John Ensler, president and CEO of Catholic Charities in Washington, D.C., and a priest on weekends at St. Bartholomew's Church in Bethesda, Maryland, what he thought of Benedict's decision to retire.
I thought it was a very courageous and very, servant-oriented decision. You know, here's the Pope. For 600 years, basically, it has not happened. And he decides, for whatever reason, that it's time for him to step aside, let someone else take his place. I don't know the reasons, but I certainly respect and appreciate the goodness. And I think of St. John the Baptist, you know, and he said of Jesus, he said basically, he must increase and I must decrease. And I think to some degree, I felt like this is what the Pope was saying. I've got to get out of the way here. Of the church. I love the church so much, but maybe not the right person health-wise otherwise right now. So I was just overwhelmingly impressed with that decision. Just unbelievably good decision, I think. Well, a servant-oriented decision. And I think it's turned well because Francis has been a great pope since.
And speaking of Pope Francis, were you ever in the company of either Pope Francis or Pope Benedict when they came to Washington?
Actually, both. Benedict came to Washington. I saw him when he was here. But Pope Francis actually came to Catholic Charities, where I work. It's my day job. If I work in the parish on the weekend. So, but basically, he was right here in our chapel, right in front of our building. He walked to the front door of our building and he went across the street to the King Library. And we had a big tent set up and he greeted the people. It was an amazing thing. So that was a very special time for me to be right in his presence. But again, when Benedict was here earlier, Cardinal World arranged that. I saw him, but not so close.
Is there anything that you want to say about former Pope Benedict that I didn't specifically ask you that you think is important to mention?
When I think about Pope Benedict, I just think about the sacrifice, or the servant leadership. This is not norm for most people to say, I'm in charge, I get all the power, I get all the prestige, but I'm going to get out of the way. That wouldn't happen with most CEOs, wouldn't do that. Secular leaders wouldn't do that. It's a pretty amazing thing. It speaks to really, I think, to the goodness of his heart and, frankly, his holiness to say, what's best for the church? What's best for the church? Maybe right now I'm not the best for the church. I'm going to get out of the way. I think it's amazing. Just amazing.
John Ensler is president and CEO of Catholic Charities in Washington. He spoke with Carol Van Dam from Washington, D.C. In Ghana, the Gadangbe Land Administration, or GDLA, says it plans to stop the illegitimate sale of galant in the Greater Accra region of the Ghanaian capital. This after the organization cautioned the Land Commission over the release of expired lease of Ga property. It comes as Ghanaians complain about challenges involved in land ownership and land disputes. Local media reports cite examples of parcels sold to multiple individuals who want to develop the land for personal use or for business activities. But representatives of the Gadangbe Land Administration say the key objective of the organization is to work closely with appropriate government institutions to reform the system of land ownership in Accra and beyond. Ni King Ayituma II is the founder and president of the Gadangbe Land Administration. He talks to me about land issues in Ghana, how his organization plans to support national development, and how to bring sanity and unity to the Gadangbe Kingdom.
It is our plan to ensure that sanity to prevail, to avoid chieftaincy disputes and divided kingdom. We ensure that land tenure system within Greater Accra region as the Gadangbe Kingdom, we, the Tumba Royal Dynasty, have come to initiate Gadangbe Lands Administration for the Gadangbe people, the diaspora, and Republic of Ghana as a whole to ensure sanity prevails in the Gadangbe Kingdom.
Now, how do you plan on doing this? Because there are already chieftaincy issues, there are sometimes disputes about land ownership and all that. How do you plan to do this?
Gadangbe Lands Administration doesn't matter any disputed when it comes to chieftaincy disputes. GDLA is in to resolve problems when it comes to chieftaincy matters. All family lands is under Gadangbe Lands Administration. So far as Tumba Royal Dynasty is concerned, the chiefs are subject to four overlords in the Gadangbe. So we'll make sure every family who is involved within the quarters of the 27,000 mile square must be subject to Gadangbe Lands Administration.
A lot of traditional chiefs in Ga or Gadangbe land have also complained that there have been lands leased to the Ghana state, the Republic of Ghana. But then those lands are being sold to individuals and out of the control of the Ga stool or the administration of the Ga lands. How do you resolve this?
It's just a simple interest. It should be very necessary that all Gadangbe family leaders must be rallied behind the GDLA and respectfully, irrespective of any administration or any administrative of lands. When having done that, all disputed lands should be meant peacefully, because it's supposed to be every land that needs to be registered under the Lands Commission must come before the GDLA to be ratified. Which family, which chief, who's supposed to be in registration of the lands?
But where does this group, the Gadangbe Lands Administration or the GDLA, derive its power from? Where do you have the legal authority to try to bring, as you said, sanity into land acquisition and land ownership in Greater Accra region of Ghana?
GDLA is a non-governmental institution. We derive our powers from four overlords of the Ghana states, such as the Asene clan, such as Nai, and such as Bobu Nungwa clan. And the crown can become the Tumba Royal Dynasty. This is where we derive our powers from. And these four overlords have appended their signature to ensure that I, Kinai Tumba, the second Chief of Defense of the Ghana state, bring sanity when it comes to Gadangbe land turning success.
Some people would say this has all political undertones written all over it. How do you plan to work with state institutions? Because people will ask you where you get the power and whether you are going to clash with the government of the day or any government that come into existence or voted for by the people of Ghana. How do you plan on supporting national issues?
We have a petition to Office of the President and all the state institutions as security per 8%. And for that matter, we being the Tumba Royal Dynasty, it is law and it is our right that Greater Accra region belongs to us.
Ni King Ayitumba II is the founder and president of the Gadangbe Land Administration. He spoke with me from New York. In Mali, Africa English Time is a television program targeting the youth of the West African nation and generating a lot of attention. It is a socio-educational and cultural program that discusses local and international news events in English and French. Dramani Soare, the host of the television show, says the program is the best way to encourage Mali's youth to practice the English language. He says despite initial skepticism due to the dominance of the local Bambara and French languages, the show has become popular among the youth. For more about the prospects of the program, I reached Dramani Soare in the Malian capital, Bamako.
You know, we live in the country where majority is youth, and particularly there are a lot of challenges here in terms of languages and also with our different partners. And the main language in which everyone could be really agree and discuss and challenge and make business, that's English. It's an international language. Everywhere you go, whatever you do in this 21st century, you find English in a way. So that's why I initiate this program, trying to gather youth, sensitize them, inform them, train them, and also trying to show them the main importance of this English language. And that's why we hold the program in which we call it Africa English Time. And also some of the content, we have a lot of rubric in which we're trying to gather people, inform them through our different rubrics, such as Africa guests, we receive guests from different domains, different backgrounds. It may be from the civil society, the political people, the ambassadors, you know, the civil society's actors. And also we have a type of rubric which we call Discovering Time. It's a rich, great rubric in which we try to discover something new to the audience.
How are the youth responding to the program?
First, it was a great shock for the youth because they have seen that we live in our country where the majority speaks French or Bambara, our local language. So bring a foreign language, you know, and it was a really great shock for them. And for the same people, they say, we don't even understand very well French. So when you bring English program, who's going to listen to you? For the time being, they realize that it's a great and interesting program because we don't need also to go to school so that to be able to express yourself in English. We need to attend those programs with different English clubs. And there are a lot of communities which are behind and supporting this platform. And they, for the first, it was really shock for them to see that program. But for the time being, we mix it. It's not 100% in English. French and English we mix so that if they could really understand and what we are doing.
Now, I saw some segment where you were interacting with the U.S. ambassador and other ambassadors. How is this helping the program?
We receive a lot of ambassadors. First, you know, when you're working with those institutions from the embassies, from the NGO, international NGOs, they're all bilingual. So they have programs such as the U.S. embassy, we receive them three times with the ambassador. They have programs such as they have scholarship, they have opportunities like job, etc. And so those programs, if they have it, they need people also who are bilingual. So the very first TV show in Mali where people speak French and in English together, that's the Africa English Time program. Now they pass through this program in order for them also to be in touch with youth in general and also share the message, share the opportunity. In our side now, also share the same information with youth, which are very motivated and committed to the program. That's why we're trying to help those embassies. We receive the U.S. embassy, the India embassy, and also South Africa and U.K. also for the different programs. And, you know, it was very useful. And also they have posted through the different pages also.
Talk to me about the prospect or the future of the program. Where do you want to see this program in the next 2, 3, 4, even 5 years and beyond?
Well, in 5 years coming, we want not this program, because it's Africa English Time. So we're working with the team to change the name, the English, to Africa Youth Time. And this Africa Youth Time, we want to promote very well the democracy, the like free expression, and also trying to not only limit the program in Mali here. In Burkina Faso, we want the same program. In Senegal, we want the same program. In all French-speaking countries, particularly, we want this program from, in order for also them to share the same opportunity with their particular youth, because our main basis is youth.
Draman Soare is the host of the English television show Africa English Time. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half, Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah.
former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and Happy New Year, sports fans. Welcome to the New Year's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. We begin with athletics. Uganda's Oscar Chilimo and Ethiopia's Dawit Siaom became two-time winners of the Bo Classic, a World Athletics Liber Road Race in Bolzano, Italy, on New Year's Eve. Chilimo broke away over the final lap to cross the finish line in 28 minutes 14 seconds, holding off second place Creeper by 3 seconds. Chilimo claimed the Bo Classic victory for the second time in his career, following his triumph in 2020 when he won the 5-kilometer race at the Safety Park in Vadena. He crowned a successful season that was highlighted by the World 5000 meters bronze medal he claimed in Oregon. The women's 5-kilometer race was won by World 5000 meters bronze medalist Dawit Siaom for the second consecutive year. The Ethiopian crossed the finish line in 15 minutes 33 seconds to triumph by 8 seconds. In tennis news, fashion magazine Vogue Arabia has announced that WTA World No. 2 Ons Jabeur is a cover star for their January 2023 edition. The Tunisian, who is nicknamed the Minister of Happiness in her home country, enjoyed an impressive 2022 season, winning 47 out of her 64 matches with two titles to her name. She won her maiden WTA 1000 title at the Madrid Open by beating Jessica Pegula 7-5, love 6, 6-2 in the final. After an impressive 2022 season, Ons Jabeur will be eager to impress in 2023. The Tunisian will start her season at the Adelaide International, where she is the top seed. And out to cycling, where Nigerian female cyclists ended 2022 on a high after they were ranked above their rivals, Egypt and South Africa, in the elite category on the current rankings of the International Cycling Union. Out of the 9 events scored, Nigeria were placed ahead of other African countries in 5 events, with Egypt topping in 3 and South Africa in 1. Nigeria elite female cyclists were ranked top in individual sprint, keirin, 500 meters time trials, team sprint, and team pursuit events, while Egypt led in Omnium, Scratch, and 3-kilometer pursuit, where South Africa came tops in the point race. In the male category, Nigeria's elite and junior men didn't rank top in any of the events. South Africa are the leaders in the elite men's sprint, keirin, and 1-kilometer time trials considered. And on to handball, where Tunisia's handball team were crowned champions of the four-nation tournament played in Poland. The tournament is part of the warm-up for this year's Handball World Cup, co-hosted by Poland and Sweden, and is expected to begin on January the 11th. Tunisia is placed in Group H of the World Cup alongside Denmark, Belgium, and Bahrain. And that's all for this New Year's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter, and a Happy New Year to you.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The African Union, its representatives, President Obasanjo, former President of Kenya, and senior negotiators from South Africa, should be heartily congratulated or applauded for the achievement in reaching an agreement between the government of Ethiopia and the TPLF. There were also some observers who helped move things forward. Next stage was technical experts that met in Nairobi under the chairmanship of former President Kenyatta, and they use the confidence-building measures to start to put more flesh into the broad agreement reached in Pretoria. The stage was reached in these confidence-building measures that both the clients and the government of Ethiopia felt confident that they could move towards the Tigray area itself. Steps were taken to facilitate humanitarian assistance. The government began to introduce services, and the jewel in the crown was a large delegation of the African Union that arrived in Tigray and then to Mekelle. We are now at a stage where both sides feel that the end is near, and all help should be given to them to move towards the full restoration of peace and security in the territory. In the last few days, there are discernible signals that the forces of Eritrea, which were stationed in Tigray, were showing signs of moving back to their territory. In this connection, no one should delink the posture of Eritrea during the civil conflict in Tigray without looking at the bitter boundary disputes between Ethiopia and Eritrea, with loss of life. And at the end of that battle, the Eritrean forces were out of their territory and the troops of Ethiopia occupied Badme. An international panel gave Badme to Eritrea, but the government of Ethiopia, then strongly influenced by Tigrayans, refused to accept that decision by the International Boundary Commission. That remained the case, and tensions remained between Eritrea and Ethiopia until the appointment of Abiy Ahmed. One of the first decisions of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was to accept the International Boundary Commission and return Badme to Eritrea. This was a bitter pill for the Tigrayans, and they made their views publicly known. It may have been one of the problems between Abiy Ahmed and the Tigrayans. So with peace being restored in Tigray and government forces returning, it is understandable that confidence may have been reached and the threat perception of the Eritreans may have lessened and they will move backwards. Let's hope that prior to the complete cessation of all hostility, that Eritrea will remove all of its forces from the territory of Tigray. One should be very happy that at long last, this bitter struggle is coming to an end. And let us look at this day, the first day in 2023, the beginning of reemergence, to say, of the African Union robust mediation activities in the African continent, as was the case when the OAU, the predecessor of the AU, began in the 60s. It resolved a number of boundary disputes between African states and prevented what most have predicted of series of wars in the African continent. And it also should demonstrate to outsiders that it makes no sense for the African Union's role in Libya to be marginalized. Africans have demonstrated that they could solve African problems by themselves with the help and support of the United Nations and the other international partners. Let's hope that this will be a new page for Africa. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect and flashback with music from the continent.
Por down the pressure every time, baby. I go make your life better. Cause you dey give me ginger, oh, say. You dey give me ginger, oh, say. I cannot do like Carol, say. Say you know they do me like Shiro, say. Say she dey give me ginger, oh, say. She dey give me ginger, oh, say. My baby no be Carol, do like Caro. My girl, you know they do me like Shadow. So she dey give me ginger. She dey give me ginger. My baby no be Caro. She dey give me ginger. Pretty oh, oh, oh. Baby come close to me. Baby give me your love. Baby come close to me. Say it no matter anything they do. Can I mean I?
Go. Kumbe ukilima na shamba na zavani na Elizabeth klipu za usikivuja ndo haitaimarika eti au ndo hataifuja na waza mchana usiku chiku alifiki wanda utukana tunabifu au imradi kiki na waza kina Kimambi bwana wangekuwa wagaribi hivi kuli ningejulikana songe nizima sisikipi miloaza leo shawaza sana mina kiba ugomvi kipi nikagundua ni ushamba na ujana wa kugomba ni wa mashabi
nawa 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 nawa
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the elephant does not limp when walking on thorns. I'm your host, Peter.